here I am. It's Sunday night. You know how rarely the Sunday night recordings make it, because I end up getting so exercised, and I end up saying things that shouldn't be said about people that shouldn't have things said about them, and so I end up throwing them away. The problem is I don't want to be very careful, because I think in spending your time being too careful, one ends up, I'm going to stick this in my pocket, sort of. Okay, we're just coming into, this is Santa Rosa, and so that's why the sound, it was really bad there for a minute, and now the sound quality is better, because the world isn't whistling through here. Anyway, so, tell ya. Always got to be careful in these towns. They've usually got really strict speed limits. And last ticket I got was in Vaughan for going 50 and a 40. And, well, that was expensive, $82. Don't want that to happen too often at all. Been quite it's been an interesting week, and I don't know quite what to expect out of things. But here I am, making the normal trip back to where I spend my week working. Thinking today for Richard Rust, who's, among other things, is the instructor of the Elders Quorum. Got called to be the instructor, and Richard's a very good guy, very methodical, and it was really sad. I needed to step out several times to take care of various things. We're getting close to the need to put in a quarterly report. June is one of the magic months where those who attend church in June are counted against a lot of things, including how much budget money is given to the branch. So it's really important that things be quite accurate, and that we make sure that everybody who has attended in the quarters is counted. Oh, so I was out doing all that. I came back in, and Richard was kind of, he was pleading with the brethren to say something. He was having to just talk, and everybody was being, not saying anything. And I had just mentioned to Dave my friend Dave Marto that it might be good for me to try and take care of some business during second hour, because I think people get a little I don't know how much faith my stories promote. I think that they certainly promote my faith, but it's all in these wonderful blessings that I get from the Lord. I tell the story about my acquisition of my car, and I could tell the story again. I'm sure I have in recording, so I won't bother, the whole concept of being faith promoting might be washed away by them saying, well, I don't have those kinds of experiences. And you're going, oh, I don't understand why you can't have these kinds of experiences, you know, where you are simply led. Of course, I was reminded again of the fact that I have been extremely blessed, and I'm not sitting here saying that I deserve any of it. I always try to qualify these things by saying, I don't think I deserve any of this. I think as we put our trust in the Lord, it's really all about the Lord and how much He is willing to get involved in our lives if we'll let Him. Anyway, so I've been feeling like that I really don't I feel like I don't make anybody very happy because they go, well, it's just not good to tell stories like that. Those are stories that shouldn't be talked about. And you go, okay. So I've been thinking that I just need to quiet down more, but this just means that my friend Richard Rust is constantly in the state of just trying to have to keep things going when people just are not talking. It was bad though, because I was actually sitting there kind of working on attendance in priesthood, and he asked me a question. I was like, oh, what? Is it right? And I think he was just asking me the question because he figured I would respond. And I went, I'm really sorry, I was doing something else. You know, which is totally inappropriate. You know, you're supposed to be paying attention in class. And it's like, oh, God. You can't win. I remember, I think it was an apostle talking about when I listen to it, it sounds like Elder Scott of the Quorum of the Twelve at the time, and he talked about, you know, that often you'll get inspiration when you're in the right places doing the right things that will cause things to come into your mind, and you want to, you know, record them. And he says, he gave an example of one time when he actually walked out of the meeting and went and sat in the car. And not only did he get that original impression, as he prayed and asked for more, he got more. And, you know, I can rightly think that there's going to be some little old lady who comes out of the church and raps on his car window and scolds him that he's supposed to be in, you know, he's supposed to be in Sunday school, or he's supposed to be in sacrament meeting, and, you know, doing her due diligence to make sure he's where he's supposed to be. And it's like, well, he was where he was supposed to be, and he got inspiration, and then, you know, he started doing things. And you go, and you weren't paying attention to the speaker. It's very important to pay attention to the speaker. And you're going, well, then how am I, if I do get inspiration, I'm supposed to be paying attention to the speaker, how am I going to respectfully sit there and act like I'm listening to him when I'm really far more interested in trying to get down information that the Lord's trying to give me? And it does, you know, it's like, I'm sorry. Those who are inspired, and that's not a calling, that's not something like that, it's just, you know, I don't think it simply comes from willingness to have inspiration. It also comes from a track record of having acted on inspiration too. And I'm not saying I'm some fantastic paragon of doing that, but I've certainly been blessed. You know, so when people go, I don't know why you hang with this job, you really struggle with it, and you complain about it, and I do. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and disavow it. I do. Sometimes jobs makes me insane. But am I blessed? Yes. Does God help me with the job so I can do it? Yes. I think He blesses me with inspiration beyond my skill level in being able to do these things. And so the miracles that came about in me getting this job, the fact that when I look back on it in kind of a Steve Jobs sort of a way and see the kind of row of dots be behind me, and I look around and it made it so that I, like, for instance, if I would have stayed at Eastern instead of taking this job at New Mexico Tech in Socorro, I would have very soon been in the position of having to go back and forth to Portales. And at the time when it became necessary to start doing that, I had relied for a long time on the fact that I could go and spend the week basically at Oasis State Park. I could go get an annual camping permit and be able to spend four nights at Oasis State Park. It was a doable thing, but my income would have been very reduced. It would have gone, you know, and it would have taken me much longer to get to the amount of money I'm making now. And my biggest purpose in doing the job I have now is for the pension that I'm going to get here in 3.5 years. And all the money that I make in excess of, you know, what I was making before at Eastern, that's just that much more money I will have upon retirement. You know, people go, I got, I don't know if it was necessarily chastised, but it was people telling me how, you know, well, I kept working until I was 75, and you're going, well, I don't, you know. He says, let me tell you. I don't consider that particularly an amazing virtue. I know everybody comes from, oh, you know, you are defined by your willingness to work, and you know, I don't want to say, well, no, I do. I tell people, I said, I'm a horribly lazy sort. Sometimes I call it being a lazy workaholic, and I'm really quite, you know, and they go, well, that doesn't make any sense. That's an oxymoron. And they go, well, when I need to work to get something done, when something's crashed or dies, I need to be able to resurrect it. My tendency is to be a terrible workaholic and not walk away from it. Now, the job I have now really doesn't require that. I have our technical director. He isn't actually my boss, but he's, you know, he kind of functions that way. He takes care of all the hard stuff. It's his environment, and I understand that. So I don't really have to do that very much. There's some things that have kind of been handed down to me, and he doesn't want to have anything to do with it, and I understand. Unless I'm just, you know, lost. Anyway, I apologize. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, so no, I'm not one of those sorts of people. You know, once I don't have to work for a certain amount of money, and it's getting better, I'm not gonna. You know, I think it's more useful, especially given the fact that my wife Lisa, she's turning 61 here this week. She's turning 61 like tomorrow, the day after. Tuesday, she's turning 61. And I'm, you know, I'm 55, and they all say, well, you know, 55 is too young to stop working. And you go, well, I'm not stopping working yet, but I will at 58 and a half, you know. And, I've always, you know, and I'm really going for a thing that I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do it. My son Matthew, who we still take care of right now that may very well change. You know, somebody else may profit better off of taking care of Matt and living with him. He doesn't need much at all. Matt doesn't need anything, but everybody's kind of nervous about him spending his nights alone. He is too. He doesn't want to have his nights spent alone. Now that means that you can have a full life and just not worry too much about Matt. You know, he'll take care of getting the food that he wants, and as long as you stock him with the thing he wants, it's okay. But, you know, becomes a question of what do you know, what's possible to do. It says, you know, 58 and a half is a great time to go on a mission. And now Lisa, when I'm 58 and a half, Lisa's 6 years older than I am, so that would make Lisa 64 and a half, pushing 65. And we could do a mission then. probably only be able to do one or two, because I think once you turn 70, they don't let you do missions anymore. I think it used to be based on health, but I think now it's more along the lines of, you know, you just simply can't do stuff like that anymore. Anyway, so it kind of becomes a thing. It says if you want to go on mission, or something mission-like, like just saying we're going to go and we're going to move someplace else for a little while, and we're going to help try to build up the church somewhere. I don't, you know, to be honest, I don't think I have a lot to offer in the way of missionary works. I can't say I haven't had some good influence on people who have joined the church. But I think my forte really ends up being helping those that are in the church stay in the church, helping those who don't, you know, just keeping the church going where it's really struggling somewhere. Just going to be able to do that for a time. Like the opportunity to do something like that. If not doing a mission, then doing something that would be considered mission-like. And, you know, if I take people's advice, well, I worked until I was 75, and you go, wow, then that just means that you made sure you never went on a mission together. That's an amazing thing. Both Lisa's parents and my parents went on missions as seniors, and both of them just say it was the best gosh golly time of our lives. It was fantastic. And getting closer to the Lord and to each other, it's a wonderful thing. And I would like to follow in those footsteps somehow. I say my parents, it was my dad and my stepmother. And, you know, my mother's perfectly fine and perfectly well, and she does fine things, very stalwart, very good in the gospel. So, you know, I want to make sure people know that, you know, my mom's great, but she couldn't go on a mission in her old age for two or three reasons. The health problems were there. The sad part was it was just... The really sad part was they didn't need to be problems. If she would have gotten a pacemaker earlier in her life, she would have been able to continue doing what she was doing for quite some time. You know, anyway... But my dad and his wife, went on a mission to Uruguay. I think it got cut short a little bit. My dad had problems, health problems, and just cut things short. But had a good influence on a lot of people, which is always good. And of course, Lisa's parents went to San Jose, California. A totally new experience for them. And they loved it, and everybody loved them for all the things that that they accomplished there as well. And I want that opportunity for Lisa and I, while we have the opportunity. And yeah, so that means that you have to stop working. And, you know, for all the people who say, well, you know, I kept working up until I was such and such an age. And you go, that's great. You know, fine for you. But I would rather do other things with my time rather than just spend it earning more money. So, you know... It's just my mindset. You know, it's for people who say, well, they've got a pension. And you go, yeah, I got a pension. Makes it so that I can go and serve without any thought for remuneration. And that's interesting to me. I don't know if it goes up to exciting, but it's interesting to me. I like to give it a try. You know, people all say, well, you've got that. And you go, you know, I said, I wouldn't be surprised if I had one of his brothers or sisters decide that they want to come and just kind of be live in the house. We would certainly want somebody to come live in our house. And be there for Matt at night. Help him with the things that he does. He does some volunteer work. So it's good to help him with that. And he's somebody who says, you know what, I just want a part-time job. And you go, that might actually work. What you could get and what Matt can get combined. You guys can live, and it's not all that tough, not tough at all. So we'll kind of see what happens there. I don't really know. You know, one doesn't know the future, knows what the circumstances are going to be. And says, so don't just drop things. Don't eliminate possibilities just because they don't seem possible today. They might become possible later. Kind of look at it that way. I'm very grateful for the opportunity I have to be who I am and live where I am and have the opportunities that are available to me. I've got to get better at just being okay with the job I've got. I'm certainly grateful for the blessings that I get, and that should probably extend. It's just because I am. It says I'm just simply grateful for this job. I express that every time I get evaluated, and I'm grateful. Grateful for the job. That's all I have to say. I know they probably don't get that very often, but that's how I feel. So, anyway. Oh, hey! I was coming back. I've been thinking about some other things I can do with my YouTube channel. Yason Ben David HaKohen, which is my somewhat Jewish name. And I've been thinking about doing some stuff. Something came to mind and I started writing down about it. They have videos from people where they answer questions from the internet. Now, you know, people don't ask me questions. I've got all of two people that look at my my stuff. It ends up, I think, being me and Lisa and maybe one other person to whom I am not very familiar. There's actually six people who subscribed to my thing, but all those six people were from the deep past. I actually changed the name of my channel from something that had been before, and there's some really old stuff on there. It'd be great if I could combine it with my really old one, which had the kids, you know, and it was about autism and stuff like that. Well, no, it really wasn't. It was just us talking, and the it was called The Family Autistic, and I don't really know how to access that one anymore. I don't know if I can, to be honest. Anyway, from a long time ago, you know, like 2002, 2003, so the kids were really young, and they kind of got caught up in the whole thing. I finally got gifted a webcam, so the kids were having fun using the webcam to make recordings. Anyway. So I was thinking about what I could do, and then I, just this morning while I was sitting in church, it's like, oh my gosh, you need to talk about, I used to call it the 100-year rule. I think it's probably gone to the point where I've been calling it kind of the 150-year rule, which isn't as much fun. Calling it the 100-year rule might still work because there really wasn't a lot of medical testing that got done 100 years ago. There was a little bit, but 150 years ago there was none, right? Very, very little got done. That was back in the days when they were still checking the color of your urine, and that was pretty much what happened, and they were still on some level still trying to balance humors and stuff like that. You know, a Dr. Quinn medicine woman was a little bit out there because I think the kind of medicine that she would have been doing would have been less scientific than portraying. But I it doesn't matter. The basic idea of this 150-year rule is that if it couldn't be tested for 150 years ago, it might be of questionable value. And of course, every doctor would just go ballistic because this is this is what they do, is test you and then make interpretations about what your problem is based on the tests that they've done. And of course, you know, the more tests that get done, I'm not sure exactly, one would hope the more accurate the information they have, but at the very least, they at least have more information to draw on. However, you know, the impression out there, and I've seen few doctors who would refute this, even though I think it's just simple logic, is that everybody, according to most medical knowledge today, according to most doctors, your grandparents and your great-grandparents should have died at birth, should have lived for a year, maybe two, and should have dropped dead from bad food, a thousand different buggies that are around, should have died of sleep apnea, should have died of diabetes very young, but yet we have evidence that if a child survived childbirth, that was a big cause of death for children, was simply childbirth itself, could get through to the age of maybe 8, there's a reasonable chance that if a child got through the age of 8 without dying of something, or of just life, they had every chance of living to be 80. Now, right, life was hard, times were rough, there was a lot more occupational hazards than they are now, and that would often take people younger. Has the life expectancy risen? Yes. It says, but a ton of that rise came from our ability to help children get through childhood. Of course, we've kind of mitigated those strides ahead by making it possible for people to survive that probably wouldn't have survived beforehand. You know, we have a lot more children with congenital problems that live far longer, that live into adulthood, and even quite a ways into adulthood, before that congenital problem finally happens, which the congenital stuff would have likely killed a kid before they were 5 or 6 or 7. But yeah, it says that's its own strange thing, you know. We have a lot more people who have a lot more medical issues that live longer, and to as far as I'm aware, to a very large extent, this is one of the pillars upon which modern medicine is financially dependent, is basically sick people that 150 years ago would have died either at birth or you know, within the first 5 or 6 years of life, that now live much longer, but, you know, are constantly in and out of hospitals, doctors rely on a certain proportion of people who come and see them every couple of weeks or every month or so, you know, constantly being monitored, constantly having various drugs and stuff like that adjusted to, you know, to take care of them, and that's one of the great pillars of modern medicine, is the constant stream of people who are just sick, sick, sick all the time. Where 150 years ago, you might not have lived as long, but going to a doctor was not really much of a feature of your life at all. You might go occasionally when something was really wrong, when you go, I was sick, but it just doesn't seem to be going away, doctor. Please help me. And they would figure out what it was and either fix it or they'd say, well, you're going to die, or something, whatever. You know, those people wouldn't have survived very long. So it really almost becomes kind of a question of how's your quality of life, and what kind of life do you have if you're sitting in the doctor's office a lot, or if you're getting sent to extremely expensive drugs, therapy, whatever, and you're going, this is no kind of life. So that's why I kind of have the 150 rule, which is, if this wasn't something that could be identified 150 years ago, you might want to just sit back and say, I'm not taking a lot of tests. I really don't want to know what my problems are, because, I'm sorry. A lot of getting wrapped up in what I call metamania is part of, taking so many tests that you're finding these strange things that really aren't going to either kill you or make your life horrible or painful, but that you go and do because your doctor says, oh, we need to work on this because you could die of this. And you go, I could die of 1,000 things. But the problem is, if you're trying to save me from something, please stop. He says, I'd rather live my life and be happy and then just get sick and then a couple of weeks later, I'm dead. He says, that sounds more like a life than, you need to come in every, it's always funny. Lisa went and had a mammogram done. Yet another thing that 150 years ago did not exist. And you never would have known. People say, well, you probably had breast cancer. And you go, well, you know what? People just didn't know that. And they would go on living their lives. If they had pain, they would either deal with the pain or they would ignore it. And then at some point, people might say, well, it's just inexplicable. And I know the modern mentality is, I don't want anything to be inexplicable. I want to know what 5 mile long Latin name goes with what's happening to me. And if you throw enough money at it, or if you talk your medical insurance into throwing enough money at it, you can come, something can be done to tell you what you've got. And you can find out that there's all these rare things. Oh, this is pretty rare. It's only a couple of, it's only a few thousand people that have this. And the really funny thing is there's a whole lot of people with some rare things. If you take them all together in the aggregate, that's a big number of people that have something really bizarre that's only been, able to even be identified in the last 20 or 30 years. And you're going, but what does this mean? What do I, you know? And you go, don't get weird about it. Let it go. If this was inexplicable 50 years ago, why don't you just let it stay inexplicable? Don't just take tests because some doctor says, well, we can do this, we can take this test. It'll cost about $3,000-$4,000. I can get your insurance company to pay for some of that. It says, and then, you know, you can pay the rest on payments, stuff like that. And you go, oh, okay, I'm sorry. I was in the middle of Lisa's story. She went and had a mammogram done, and she had a mass of tissue. Now, they just said it could just be you've got really dense tissue in your breast, which is what it turned out to be, of course. They said, well, we want to make really sure, you know, this is all about trying to avoid malpractice. The best way to make sure that you don't get caught up in nervous doctors going crazy, doing tests, sending out to specialists to avoid malpractice is not to go consult doctors. That's really the only way you can do it. If you get a doctor involved, you know, either stop going to them once you say, yeah, I was concerned it might be this. If it's not immediately obvious that it's this, I don't care. You know, and they'll say, oh, but that could be cancer. That could be this. And you know, that could kill you. And you go, I'm not afraid of death. And you know, and that just makes them all crazy. You're living in the last doctor I went to. She said you're in denial, and you're going denial. You know, and I was like, I don't care. You know, I said I'm not going to have this conversation. I says I'm coming here. I'm coming to get one thing solved. Once it's solved, you're not going to see me. You know, I'm just not going to do it. And she was really nice the next time. She just said, yeah, she gave me some penicillin, one of the tougher ones, and solved the problem. The problem took care of, got handled, and everything was great. And yeah, she didn't bother scheduling a follow-up. And you go, good, I accomplished what I wanted to do. I'm not gonna play the game. Because, okay, here's what happened. Usually you're supposed to have a mammogram done every 6 months. You know, they do the whole, I don't know what it was, an MRI or a, yeah, I think it was an MRI. We really don't know to a certain extent how safe MRIs really are. You know, they haven't been around very long, so long-term studies on whether they're actually safe or whether they actually might cause cancer. Anyway, so she did what she was supposed to do. Lisa always used to be really good about her health, and as I have had influence on her over time, I guess she's gotten progressively less interested in doing what doctors tell you to do. Anyway, she went and had it done, and they said, ooh, there seems to be, we see something here. It doesn't look cancerous, but we're going to send you to a specialist. And the specialist had to go to the specialist, had to get a whole new bunch of stuff done, very expensive. You know, of course, they all said, well, you've got health insurance. And, you know, most of it was paid for, but not all of it. Which is the whole thing, you know. And then, and she said, well, she goes, I'm pretty sure that's not cancer, but you know what? We need to bring you in 3 months and take a look at it again, see if there's any changes. You know, and this is, you're on the wrong side of the road, buddy. Wow. that person's driving down the wrong side of the road. I don't know if they're ever going to figure that out when they get into, you know, anyway. Luckily, it wasn't a big problem, but it's like, dude, you're on a divided highway. You're supposed to be on the other side of this median. You're not supposed to be in the other lane of this side. Anyway. Golly. Okay. Anyway, so they said, yeah, come back in 3 months. And she was doing, and we went back two or three times. And they eventually just said, well, you know what? It's, I don't think it's cancer. You know, it's just not as cancer. It's not growing. It's just there. But they said, you know what? We just want to keep up, you know, we just want you to keep coming in every 3 months because we, you know, we've got this relationship. We want to keep it going. And Lisa was just like, no, you've determined there's nothing there. I don't need to come back. That's what I'm concerned about. I don't, you know, and everybody talks about, well, you need to work out, you know, you need to work out a good care plan with your physician. And they're going, I don't need to work out anything with my physician. The job of my physician is to put me in a cast when I break a bone, you know, to take care of something when something's just not right. But I'm going to determine when that is, and I'm not going to keep coming in and coming in and coming in. This is because they're just doing it because this is their livelihood. And everybody says, oh, we need more doctors. And you go, no, I think our problem is we've got too many of them still. And they all just go ballistic and go, well, you've got to go see your doctor every month because you need checkups. You need to have things tracked. This is your... We need to keep a good eye on your blood pressure, seeing if it's going up or going down or where it's headed. And you go, you know, you can check that stuff yourself. And frankly, I said, I don't even want to think how many people had dangerously high blood pressure 150 years ago who were in really dangerous jobs that really kind of stress you out, working down in the mines and stuff like that. You know, getting black lung and stuff like that. And you're going, I'm sure they had high blood pressure and they lasted into their 60s, often into their 70s. You know, we have no record that Methuselah was the product of excellent and consistent medical care. He lived to be, what, 969? This is, oh, we don't have any evidence that that happened to Adam. We didn't have any evidence of any of this going on. The evidence just isn't there. You know, surely, if it was the most important thing in their lives, some kind of record would have been kept about this. You know, we're all so weird about recording the reason for the death and trying to suss out why somebody died. And that didn't exist back then. And 150 years ago, they might have started trying to figure out why somebody died, but it wasn't all that, you know, I don't think it was very accurate. I still don't think it is, and I think it's due to political reasons. Too many people diagnosed with COVID-19, and when they died, they'd say, well, they, you know, we're going to test them to see if they had little chunks of COVID-19 up their nose, which everybody does, and they could say, well, there you go, they died of COVID-19. And you go, no, that's not true. Might have, but probably not. You know, almost everybody came back and said, oh no, it was this, and then there was a comorbidity, and having the COVID-19 just put them over the edge. Anyway, it doesn't matter, except to say, with the 150-year rule, or the 100-year rule, you know, it says don't get weird. You know, people, I swear, some people are still, and every institution of medicine is locked on to this like a leech, is about trying to find the great fountain of youth. And everybody's absolute responsibility to desire this as well. And the medical profession, the medical industry's absolute need for this to happen. Lisa may very well have breast cancer. I don't know. And right now she's just saying, I don't go and have tests done. You know, and those guys say, well, you should, you're over 50 now, bro. You should have a colonoscopy. And I go, I'm not going to have a colonoscopy. I'm not interested. And my basic excuse is I have no intention of changing my life based on that test. Therefore, there's no reason to take the test. Except, you know, I'll tell you stories about my other things. I had a gout attack, and my leg was really swollen. My primary care doctor, the only reason that I ever went to my primary care doctor is because I had to. And it was mostly because I had to get allopurinol to deal with my uric acid problem. My problem is that I produce too much uric acid. And so my joint swelled up. In this case, it was my knee. And he decided that he wanted to drain off the excess fluid. Now, the problem was that he wasn't very good at it. He said, oh. And it was like dumb, because it's like, I don't care. It says every time I have a swollen up knee, I know what it is. It's too much uric acid. You know, I set the thing up. I take my anti-inflammatory, and I can get over the counter. It's called ibuprofen. If you take enough of it at a time, it has an anti-inflammatory effect. I don't take it all the time. I only take it when it's needed, so it's not going to be a weird deal. Trust me, the stuff that they give you to take care of it, if you did that on a regular basis, it would cause lots of trouble, too. Anyway, so, you know, and I'd have to go in for the allopurinol, and I made the mistake one time of saying, well, I got a swollen up knee with gout, and he got his big old pig sticker of a needle that looked like a soda straw, and he was trying to take out the fluid, and he didn't do a very good job. And he said, hey, I can send you to a specialist that does a really good job of taking that stuff out. And I got sucked into it, went to the specialist, he drained it out, but he wanted to see what was going on, so he scheduled me for arthroscopy. Is that how you say it? Anyway, I'm going to put stuff in my knee and look around. And that's all he did. He looked around. He said, oh, look at that. I said, look at all that crap. And he scraped off some of the, what looked like uric acid crystals. He said, well, I probably shouldn't be doing that. And it's like, what? What? And I don't even want to think about how much that bill was. I had health insurance, but I ended up paying a few thousand dollars out of pocket just to satisfy this specialist's curiosity. Apparently he didn't know much about gout, so he was using me as kind of a, oh, I just want to, you know. And let me tell you, I was down and out for weeks on sick leave with a really swollen up knee, because your knee's going to swell up when they do arthroscopy. Thank goodness he didn't decide just to cut the whole thing open and do stuff like that. That would have been horrible. So anyway, yes, I'm sorry, I've gotten really quiet. Just leave me alone. Stay away from me. I'll decide when something's important. And, boy, you know, do I take some grief from doctors? Abso-stinking-lutely. I do. But I don't care. Because, you know, it's my life. I do not want to spend my time constantly going to the doctor's offices, having them say, well, you know, because I started playing that game too. You know, I used to get a prescription for a year of what do you call it, of allopurinol, and that would be my only visit to the doctor, was to get that allopurinol rehab. I had some doctors who would say, oh yeah, that's fine, and I wouldn't even have to come in. He would just call it in, and I would get another year of allopurinol, and it was wonderful. If I only had to visit the doctor once every 2 years to satisfy him that I wasn't having a big problem, that was great. But it got down to the fact I went to one clinic with a nurse practitioner, and I told her exactly what I want. I said, I need to have my annual prescription re-upped. And I said specifically, you know, I want to have, you know, I want you to do the prescription for every 90 days, because I've got a pharmacy that fills, that likes filling it every 90 days, and I want it for a year. And what I ended up getting was one where, and she was kind of snitty about it, she said, well, I gave you a prescription, but it's only good for 6 months, and it's for every month. You know, I'm only going to give you 30 at a time. I didn't know if she was nervous that I was, I don't know what weird black market use there is for allopurinol. I don't think you get a high or a low. I don't see why it is a controlled substance. But in the United States, pretty much everything is a controlled substance. And I think it's hilarious that they've decided that marijuana is okay. You don't even have to go to a doctor to get marijuana now. But I can't get allopurinol, which does nothing to you. Certainly nothing even close to what marijuana does to you. And it's like, this is, you know, and for the whole thing, logic is zero. There is no logic to it at all. You know, if you're still having gout attacks at 150 micrograms or milligrams of allopurinol, if you still get some problems, you go up to 300, and if it still have problems after that, you just start doing different things. You know, you can do 300 and 150 for 450 milligrams. It's not precise at all. Although your doctor will say, "Well, we got to run tests, make sure that you're not having, you know, don't have too much uric acid in your system," and you go, what is one test going to prove that? And they go, oh, that's the good point. You need to come in every month and have that test done. Quite an expensive test to constantly be having done to you to basically satisfy your doctor's curiosity. You know, well, we're going to adjust your amount of allopurinol. And I did. So I finally found a source. It's kind of expensive to get allopurinol offshore for them to send it to you in large amounts. I've got a few years worth of it, and when I feel a little tingy, I will take 300 micrograms of allopurinol until I'm not feeling tingy anymore, and then I go back to 150 for a little while. And I've got the things that say, well, you can sometimes handle a very slight problem with gout through diet, but I'm not one of those guys. I apparently can't do it through diet, but that's okay, because I tend to stay away from purine-producing stuff. Anyway, so yeah, it says, do I go back for this anymore? No, because they started playing futsy games with me. No, you're going to come back every 6 months, and we're going to do a test on you, and we're, you know, and we need lab work done and stuff like that to say whether you're okay or not. And, you know, and I'm not going to give you the 300s. I'm only going to give you the 150s until I have, you know, clinical proof that you need more. And it's like, you know, I said, this is something that it isn't going to kill anybody. It's not going to kill a freaking soul. They go, well, it's going to cause kidney problems. They go, I drink water. I drink gallons of water a day. And you go, I'm not going to get any, you know, they say, well, you know, your kidneys are going to get full of uric acid crystals. And you know, that that may kill you. And you go, you know what? I'm sorry. How many people died of uric acid kidney? And you go, nobody knows. You go, I'm perfectly happy not knowing. Perfectly happy. You can live a good long time. Now, it may kill you at 70 when you might have lived to be 75 when something else was going to kill you. Because by and large, nobody says that uric acid, excess uric acid is a killer. Although I'm sure they'll come up with it. Anyway, so yeah, I get my pills offshore, and I know that that's bad. That's very bad. That's illegal. And I haven't gotten in trouble for it yet, but there's been shipments of pills that have been destroyed by customs and the FDA because I couldn't, you know, because they said, look, we found these. You're not allowed to have this stuff under these circumstances. Anyway, so it's 8:47. I can tell you other stories. My whole sleep apnea thing. I'm sorry. Nobody's died of sleep apnea. Although the guy that I would, you know, Lisa would just get worried because I'd stop breathing. And we determined, you know, and there was, you know, we got to do a sleep study, we got to do this, we got to do that, we're going to set you up on a CPAP machine ultimately, and all this stuff. And for a little while I was humoring it because the cost of things was actually zero to me. And then all of a sudden it changed and it said, oh no, now you're going to have to kick in $59 a month for the joy of having a CPAP machine, which sucks. No, it actually blows, but everything about it is just horrible. And it was a huge fad for a while back in the past. And I know very few people who were doing the CPAP machine that continue to do the CPAP machine. I lost some weight ultimately, and Lisa reports to me that I don't have a problem, and I also got something that's illegal to get in the United States without a doctor prescribing it to you and monitoring you and all that stuff. It's a simple thing that sucks onto your tongue and makes it stick out. What would happen is that in almost every case, sleep apnea is caused by your tongue falling back and blocking your breathing down your throat, your whatever they call it, esophagus. And this thing was really simple, and it just takes your tongue and makes it stick out. It kind of looks like a kid's pacifier, and most of the bulb of the pacifier that usually sticks out, the tip of your tongue is drawn out into that bulb. And it worked really well, and the issue was, I think it finally got to the point to where it trained my tongue to kind of hang out a little bit when I sleep or whatever. And ultimately, and I went to the doctor specifically to handle this at the insistence of my wife, who said that she was tired of being scared that I was going to die, because there was, you know, there was 10 or 15 seconds where I wouldn't breathe. All of a sudden I'd go, and then, you know, I would take a breath and everything would be fine. And then a little while later, it would happen again. And went through several thousand dollars of figuring out that there was nothing to it but my tongue falling back. They would never tell me that because that's too simple of a, you know, I never heard this from them. I did my own independent research, and I said, well, let's try this. And it cost me $79. I got it from offshore because you can't get in the United States without a prescription, and I wasn't going to go through the crap of talking somebody into doing it. Because doctors, you know, they say, no, the solution to this is a CPAP machine. And you go, no, I want to do this instead. Well, no, that's, no, no. You know, and I said, I'm not playing this game with you people. And the only reason why I have to play it is because they say, because some government regulator says I can't have it unless a doctor says it's okay. And I just circumvented the whole thing, you know. I could get it from a foreign source who didn't have these kinds of things, you know, get it shipped to me. It didn't really look like anything, so even if they opened it and looked at it, they'd go, I don't know what that is. Fine, if they want to spend their money on that, whatever. And it was great. And it worked great. I've still got them. Every once in a while, I'll still use them if Lisa says I'm having a problem. But she goes, I don't have a problem with it anymore. Problem would have been solved easily by her getting earplugs. And she ultimately, I think, did. But now I don't even snore very much at all. Which is great, you know. Because that's another thing. Oh, snoring's just a gateway to sleep apnea. And that guy said, oh yeah, sleep apnea is death. And he was a, quote, sleep technician. Which, and like I said, it was all the rage about 10 years ago, and now I don't think they really do much, because it came back and they go, and I'm sorry, I think too many people came back and said, this is stupid and dumb. Typically, it isn't because patients say that, it's because finally the insurance company says, we're not going to be paying for this anymore. Because we think it's kind of dumb, it's kind of stupid, nobody's dying from it, it's not life-threatening, and we don't want to pay out for it. And so, yeah, since doctors don't test for it because they're not getting paid to test for it. And if a doctor's not being paid to test for it, he ain't gonna. Or she. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be gender-specific. There's just as many female doctors who are gonna do a lot of unnecessary things based on pretty spurious, oh, we've got this wonderful new test, and it'll tell us this, 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 and this. And it only costs this much, but your insurance will pay for most of it, you know, but you'll still have to pay a couple of hundred for it. And, oh, God, terrible. Anyway, so Lisa's still stuck on some stuff. I can get my allopurinol offshore, and I can get it in enough of a supply. I've probably got enough for 3 or 4 years before I have to get some more. And I'm perfectly happy with that situation. You know, I might get to the point to where I live in another country where nobody gets weird about that. Or I can go down there and give me my supply and find somebody to sneak it across the border, or whatever. I don't mind having them ship it to me and put on the outside that it's a nutritional supplement. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me, you know? And they say, oh, that's illegal. And you go, that's a dumb law. It says that I'm not going to sit here and just keep dumb laws. Sorry. I know that's bad. You know, God's not going to bless you if you're not keeping all the rules. And you're going, I'm sorry, there's just some rules that cannot be kept. You know, anyway, so, yeah. Lisa's still stuck because she got on this thing about taking pig thyroid to try to solve her thyroid problems. And to be really honest, I think it's caused her more problems over time than it's really solved. Of course, she was really saying, "Guy, I'm so tired." And so she had started doing this. It's very expensive. She has to go and see this doctor every six months like clockwork, and he charges, you know, he does all the tests that cost several hundred dollars. He costs nearly $200 just to talk to him, and he's got a good thing about saying, you know, "Yeah, you need to go get the test done. I'll go do it for you. Okay, I'm charging you for the $160 office visit." You go and you do the test, and then he charges you for another $160 office visit to get the interpretation of the thing, and he always makes a little dinky adjustment to how much thyroid she can get. And he plays around with it, and that's important psychologically, in that you say, "Oh, I've got to go in every 6 months and get it changed," because every 6 months he has to dink with it. And it's like, well, what do you know when you're getting too much? You go, "Oh yeah, you know, my heart starts palpitating too much when I get too much." Do you know when you're getting too little? And you go, "Oh yeah, my hair starts falling out. I have those kinds of things." And so you could regulate how much of this stuff you should take based on what you see and how you feel. And it's like, well, yeah. And you go, well, then you don't need to go to the doctor anymore. It's because he's just fooling around with stuff due to numbers and stuff like that. Says it really, you know, he's just constantly taking tests and tests and tests, and it says in there that you're supposed to have this number at this level, which is kind of silly because every individual is a little bit different. Actually, they can be quite a bit different. And having one standard number, all that does is it makes him so that he doesn't get in trouble with malpractice because he's following some chart. It doesn't necessarily apply to you. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's the right thing for you, but he has to keep it within that chart. And if what you need doesn't read on the chart, he can't help you. You know, you say, "Well, I'm still feeling tired." And you go, "Well, I'm giving you as much as I can give you." You go, "I'm still feeling tired, and my hair is falling out." "Well, it's the best I can do for you." And you go, "If you gave me a little bit more, this would all stop." And you go, "Nope, I won't do that because I have to write the numbers. If that test that we do says that this is your, what, thyroid rate, I don't know what it is." Yeah, and you're screwed. And it's like, wow. You're going, how helpful is your doctor? And you go, "They can only be a certain amount of helpful." I'm not saying that it's not a good thing, you know, but yeah, you're kind of stuck. And of course, if you don't go to your doctor and have your doctor balance your humors and do all that stuff, you won't get a prescription. You can't get it. You can't behave intelligently. It's just not allowed. Okay. I'm going to give this guy... Let's see how slow I can get this guy to go before he actually passes. Go! Go! Oh, he's doing pretty good. I got him down to 45 before he finally said, "Oh, I'll pass him." God, I'm tired of people getting up in my butt. Anyway. Alright. That's what happens. So far, I have found a couple of places that might be able to get her, you know, and they say, "Well, it costs more because they're taking a certain amount of risk and stuff like that." And you go, "That's fine. Doesn't bother me." You know, this is because, trust me, I said, it's worth not having to go through all the crap, because it ends up being about $500 or $600 I don't have insurance now because I use a Christian health ministry. Everything is pretty much paid for by that, and it doesn't end up rising to the level that the healthcare ministry kicks in. This is stuff that just, you know, they say, well, you're just going to foot the bill for that. And you go, well, whatever. And, you know, he said, is it really the only pill she needs? And you go, yeah, really? It's just the only pill she needs. And you go, fine. I tell you, don't worry about it. And the whole trick is avoid doctors until you need something. And then once you have the information they can offer, stop going to them. Don't do it. You know. Anyway, so I know you're going, oh, that's bad. You shouldn't give out medical advice. And you go, I'm not. I'm just telling you how to handle a situation. This is how you should handle most situations. The only problem is there really isn't anything comparable to a doctor in doing stuff like this. It says, you know, maybe a chiropractor? I'm not sure. Being somebody that says, you need to come to me all the time. We need to set up a regular plan where you're going to come and see me all the time. Heck, you need to come and see me for the rest of your life. And on a regular basis. In fact, I want you coming in every month because I really want your money. You're going, that's really what people are. Dentists are exactly the same way. You know, don't go see them all the time. Don't go and see them when they want you to see them. It's just because they're just screwing around. You know, and people don't like to be confronted with that. And you go, you know, I says, I'm not telling you. I'm not giving you medical advice. I'm not telling you to take some pill. I'm not telling you to go and do something. What I'm basically telling you is that you don't need to be obedient to your doctor, although it's getting more and more that way. They really, you know, the old health maintenance organizations, some of those names survive, but they don't behave like that. We're almost a forced thing. You will go see your doctor or, you know, and they would do it by charging you less for your health insurance, but it was the thing that you would have to go and see your doctor on a regular basis, and you would have to get a relationship with them. And you go, I'm not interested in a relationship. It says, what I need to have taken care of can just be taken care of by a visit or two. Anyway, so there's that. And I kind of live in a place where everything's kind of just... you can get cheap office visits where I live. I go to a clinic and they offer cheap office visits. And I'm happy. I just don't know how happy I am with the joy of... Now that I'm established for this clinic, as long as that clinic survives, it always survives through the life of one doctor because he's the guy that started it. And, you know, they're making a lot of money. He's doing great. He's got a lot of doctors. He's got some doctors working for him, some nurse practitioners. And he pays them a bit, and then he gets to keep all the profits. And it comes from a whole lot of government money, too. So when people say, oh, I don't believe in government giving us health care, you go, they already do. It's just like, you know, we're playing games. Anyway, which makes just, that's why I call it metamania. And you're going, is there any escape from it? You go, not really. And you go, do we need to fix it? And you go, fix it how? You know? Well, poor people fall through the cracks, and you go, poor people always fall through the cracks. We need a system that makes it so that they don't fall through the cracks. And you go, you do know that will be almost prohibitively expensive. accept that our government can print out its own money, and they can just keep people going. You know, so I don't know what to tell you. I don't know how to help you. I don't know any of this to try to take care of what needs to be done. Anyway, so that's one of the things that I really haven't come up with a quick and ooh, it's a full moon now. It's another full moon. It's wonderful. Right, sucker. I like it. I think they were telling me that there was going to be another one. Oh, there's another, you know, mystical, scary moon coming on. And you go, you guys say they come on every month. It's a joke. You know. An eclipse means something up to a certain level. A lot of things are measured by a lunar calendar and a lunar eclipse is a conjunction of a solar calendar with a lunar calendar to a certain extent, and they happen on a reasonably regular basis, and very predictable. You know, everybody knows when these other things happen, and it's really it's really great. Anyway, don't get caught up in the hype. Everybody's about the hype now, and I'm not going to do it. So, yeah, will this be a lot of money for a YouTube channel? No. Why? Because it needs to be all about the hype. And you go, you know, I said, I'm not giving you any medical advice at all. All I'm saying is, my basic advice is, if your doctor wouldn't have known this 150 years ago because a test for it didn't exist, think back and remember that both of my grandparents lived into their 80s. They probably took no tests ever in their lives. Well, no, once they got older, they started taking a lot of tests, because that was what you were supposed to do, and they were reasonably obedient, which I'm not. I'm not a good person. I'm not obedient particularly to what everybody says. Do I try to be obedient to God? I do. But I still apply the same amount of skepticism to almost everything, just as much as I do with medicine. And I know it's not going to make me any fans. The current prophet of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Russell M. Nelson, he was a physician. There are several other, there are a few other physicians in the first, amongst the apostles. And, I'm sorry. I said, I'm not going to your doctor. I'm not going to do that. Getting me health insurance, I don't care. This is the number one thing. If I have to have health insurance, and of course now it's kind of a law in the United States, you have to have health insurance, or you'll be penalized to force you to do it. Luckily, we've gotten to the point to where they've said, no, you don't have to, you know, we're not going to enforce the mandate where you have to do it and where you'll be penalized if you do, which is totally surprising. I figured when Biden got into office after Trump had just said, no, you don't have to pay for not doing medical insurance. Now, I've already got my out. I don't have to pay the penalty because I'm part of an exemption. However, you know, that exemption could always go away. Regardless, so yeah. That's my big thing. 150 years ago, if they didn't know about something, please think back upon the people that lived 150 years ago and how long a lot of them lived and the things that they worried about and the things that they did. And you're going, wait a minute, I think they had better lives than I did. they might have had pain, but they weren't sitting around getting soaked financially and putting their families into permanent hock. Let me tell you, if one even kind of minor thing happens that basically requires surgery, that could totally bankrupt you and your family forever. And you'll never be able to pay it off. And you go, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And you go, no, the only thing horrible about it was that you did something about it. Next time something happens to my wife, if she needs to have a stone taken out of one of her kidneys, I'm not doing it in the United States. Luckily, I've got kind of a healthcare sort of thing where it doesn't matter where I have it done. So we're going to go down to Mexico. We're going to have some Mexican doctor just go and cut you open and take it out. That's it. And you'll get sutured up and you'll go home. And that's it. So we're not going to go through the whole American thing because it was terrible. And it ended up costing in excess of $40,000 to basically take a rock out of her back. And it's like, I bet you I could get somebody in Mexico to do it for $2,000 that costs $40 up here. You know, because they were all, well, we need to have this, we need to have that, we need to check it this way, we got to have an ultrasound done, and this thing and that thing and this thing and that thing, and you're going, good night, man. Just go and cut into her and go and dig around and find her, you know, her kidney's not, it's pretty big, and have them go in there and get that rock out of there. At least I start taking some stuff that softens up these rocks so you pass them easier. Poor Lisa's got these huge problems. You know, I don't know if she's going to have another one. Who knows? But, you know, are we going to handle it differently next time? So, probably. So, trust me, I can have a fine Mexican vacation that includes her getting her kidney stone out and still have fun for the $40,000 that a modern place here did to make her life miserable, and stretching it out for months. We were still getting bills 10 months after it had happened. Somebody would finally decide, oh, I looked at her chart, therefore she needs to pay me $300 or $500. And after a while, even your insurance will stop paying for this stuff because they go, oh, it's been long enough. You know, and you're going, oh my gosh. And you're going, yeah, apparently this was a guy that just kind of looked at your chart and said, oh, that's interesting. And you have to pay them $300 for that. And you didn't ask them. It was not something you requested. It was something that just kind of happened. And so, yeah. Yeah, just don't do it. Anyway, so, yeah. I'm sorry this doesn't have much to do with religion and stuff like that. Like I said, not particularly obedient person. Says, now I do care about other people, you know, and I do understand that there's these huge holes that poor people fall into, especially in New Mexico. If you're poor, you can get on Medicaid if you're a child up to the age of 18. You can get all of your medical needs will be paid for if you're poor. Women can have the pregnancy and anything incidental to it can be paid for through that way. They don't offer any health insurance to men unless they're disabled. Like my son Matt, he doesn't have to be on my insurance because everything that happens to him is paid for. Now I take him to the doctor about as often as I take myself to the doctor, which is never, you know. And I'm sure that I'm probably breaking some rule about, you know. Yeah, he needs to go every 6 months because he's disabled. And, you know, they try to make it so they say, well, no, this is offered to your child. It's free. And he gets cool points to go toward getting boom boxes and DVD players. And that used to be the enticements. I'm sure there are different ones now. But, you know, and that would happen. And it's like, wow. And so, yeah, they've been doing that. They really haven't gotten down to the whole thing of, they don't really have a mechanism to force you to do it. And it's just not part of America yet to force you. Although, with all this stuff about vaccine mandates and stuff like that, that almost happened, that was going to be a great gateway to saying you have to sign up with a doctor, you have to see that doctor every 6 months like clockwork, or the jackboots are going to come to your door and drag you off to medical prison, where we will force you to go and see doctors, you know. But there's no real infrastructure. There's really not enough doctors to force everybody to do that, so they haven't done it yet. Although the doctors would be more than excited and probably just say, hey, I saw you. Okay, you're in. Thank you. And it's like, man, you got paid $500 for just basically acknowledging my presence in your office. I got to pay a chunk of it, and my insurance company got soaked for the rest. They don't care because that insurance company, it's insurance. What does it do? Its job is to make money. And you go, so they're going to make sure that you pay exorbitant premiums on your health insurance to make up for the fact that you're being required to do all this. And it is. It's like, okay, if that happens, I got to move out of this country. And there's nothing else I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to go somewhere where I won't get treated like this. If I'm off somewhere, they'll just leave me alone. So that's really what I want more than anything else. Left alone. Please don't bother me. You know, I'm not going to make you any trouble. Or try not to make any trouble. I don't like being sick from work because I really don't like to get weird about it. But now it's kind of the thing of if you say you're sick, they just go, okay, fine. I haven't had a situation where I was sick for about 4 days. And no, you know, well, some of the other place I had, they had a thing that if you were sick for more than 3 days, no, if you're sick for 2 days, if you want to take a third day, you had to have a doctor's note to come back. And you go, I feel like I'm in elementary school. And you go, yeah. They have wanted to get to there. One of the great things about having unions still, even though there's not very many of them, and they really aren't terribly helpful, is that they will tend to come to bat in general for people and make sure that you don't have to live that kind of life particularly. You just won't have to do it. And that's great. Okay, we're to Willard. We're going to pass up the turnoff that goes to up to Estancia, and go on the mountain there. And that's where I usually get some gas. Today especially, it's 20 cents off. The price isn't great, but that makes it the cheapest gas I'm going to be getting this week. Which is great. Anyway, so yes, like I said, not giving medical advice. I'm not telling you a drug to take for stuff like that. I'm just saying you don't need to go and play with the doctor as much as you want to. And this applies to a lot of things in life. Don't get caught up in things. Don't get stuck doing these things. Anyway, so. I don't know how to condense that down into one of those nice little videos I put on YouTube that is supposed to get like 3 million views, and that I'll get paid a whole lot of money ultimately, although probably not, and suck away all that money somewhere, and maybe retire us a little bit earlier. Wouldn't mind that either. So, I'm done. Talk to you later. Oof, 104, an hour and 40 minutes. Whoa, doggies.